Well, Senator Santorum, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. I just wanted to ask you a few questions regarding your Made in America economic revitalization plan that you released last Friday. Looking through the plan, I'm just curious. I saw the first point, bullet point, was cut and simplify personal income taxes by cutting the number of tax rates to just two, 10% and 28%. What income levels would fall under each, as far as what would be the top income level for the 10% bracket?
Well, actually, to be honest, Jerry, we're still working with the economic models to try to figure out what that inflection point should be. So I can't give you that number right now. We're trying to make sure that we can run a model that and have a model that provides as big a 10% rate as possible. Mm-hmm. And provides all the tax base possible for middle income Americans, and still come up with a solid revenue number that doesn't cause more of a hole in the budget. So we're tinkering with that right now, and we're not set on it.
Okay, why two tax rates? Why not just go with a flat tax?
Well, I've seen flat taxes fly many times and get shot down repeatedly for the same reason, and that when you go to a single rate, you can do lots of things to try to make them more progressive, and almost everybody tries to make them more progressive and less, or should I say less regressive, mm-hmm. But it just is too hard, and it tends to fall, because whatever you do, higher income taxpayers are going to end up paying a lot less, and middle income taxpayers are going to end up paying a lot more. And when most people put pen to paper, they realize that any kind of flat tax tends to inflate taxes on more people than it cuts. A lot more people. Now, I understand the whole growth component of it, but I think you can accomplish the same thing without having the situation where people are going to end up paying a lot more in taxes by going with two rates. And having a completely lower rate than a slightly higher upper rate. And mm-hmm. Again, the idea that a flat rate is truly a flat rate is just false. And, no flat rate tax that I've seen says that someone who's making $1,000 a year is going to pay 15%, and someone making, or 20%, and someone making $1 million is going to pay 20%. They have all sorts of things that try to make it more less regressive, mm-hmm. and my feeling is quit trying to play around with all those things because of the single rate, and let's just have some level of progressivity in the rate, and that way you don't have to monkey around so much with trying to make the tax less regressive.
Okay, this is all centered around the family being the first economy. Now, some people, when they hear that, they may not understand what that means. How would you explain that to them?
Well, the family is an economic unit. You have mothers and fathers and children working to provide a stable home. To provide housing, to provide food, to provide. I mean, it is a little business, if you will. And the businesses of America are better when you have more oars in the water, more people helping to create that economic activity, or allocate the division of labor, if you will, within that economy to maximize the economic benefit. And sometimes the division of labor is to have moms and dads both working outside the home. Sometimes it's for one spouse or the other to be the dominant provider, and having the other one be there to provide for the children and the needs of the children. So all of that is sort of a classic economics analysis, that the whole fits that analysis, and we have to look at it for that role that it plays in society. And the stronger we can make that basic economic unit with a mother and a father, so there is division of labor, so there is efficiency that can be created, that there is specialization, if you will, with either raising children or earning money or a combination of both, mm-hmm. the better and more efficient that home can be, and the better product that's going to come out of, the more stable our society is going to be.
Okay. I was looking at, you used incentivize on a couple different occasions. One was in regards to education, how to promote, to encourage states to provide greater parental choice in education, and then you used it again, looking for my notes here. Well, when you say incentivize the states, what do you mean by that?
Well, what I'm talking about is in the case of education, as an example, one of the things that I believe in is to take, really remove the federal role of primary and secondary education as far as its prescriptiveness and what the educational environment will look like at a public school level, and pretty much get rid of a lot of that money, if not most of that money, and to leave some money in place for what I consider to be what is necessary, which is a revolution in education, to have a parent-centered, customer-centered, which is the parents, or the customer of the education system, that a system that focuses on them and their responsibility as part of their autonomy, if you will, their responsibility of educating their children, and that we should have a support from the government and from the community to help parents provide the best possible atmosphere and setting for a complete education of their children, not just academics, but character and virtue and spirituality and the other things that make up the components of being an adult. That's what I'd love to see, that kind of transformation. Mm-hmm. And there will be obviously costs associated and problems associated with doing that transformation, and to the extent that we can make money available at the federal level for these types of projects, that we will do so. And I don't have one idea in mind. I had a woman in Waterloo this morning asking, well, what's your plan? I said, well, my plan is not to have a plan. My plan is to allow this to be an organic type of market-driven, customer-driven revolution in this country, where we transform the education system into one that is a support structure and assistance for parents to get a customized education for each child in America based on what parents believe in working with their children, and obviously the people in the education community. But parents believe it's in the best interest of their child holistically, not just academically or otherwise.
Okay, so we're talking pass-through money.
Yeah, we're talking about money that would go to support innovation.
Okay. Looking at down a little bit further down, you bring up Social Security and Medicare reforms. Looking for the exact language here. Reform Social Security and Medicare for sustainable retirements. What does that look like?
Well, it looks like a Medicare system that is very similar to what Paul Ryan's plan is. I was a big supporter of the Medicare Advantage reforms within the Medicare prescription drug bill. It's one of the reasons that I ended up voting for that bill, was because of the major reform of Medicare that was in there. And I think that's the future of Medicare, that we have a system that is like the federal employee health benefit system, where you have a fixed dollar contribution from the federal government, and flexibility in designing different insurance products for seniors, and having seniors make that determination as to what kind of product they want to purchase. So that's the fundamental reform of Medicare. As far as Social Security, I'd always been a big supporter of personal accounts for Social Security, but we're in a different place. I was one of the leaders and the greatest proponents of personal accounts, but I kept saying, look, we're going to reach a point where we're not going to be able to do this, because we're not going to have any surplus in the Social Security account to actually set these accounts up and get this process rolling. And maybe we're lucky by the time we want to do this reform, but we're not running big deficits everywhere else. But if what I fear is the case, and we're going to have huge deficits in addition to the Social Security deficit, we're not going to be able to borrow money to finance these accounts. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you're going to be in a situation where you can't add to the debt to create personal accounts. And I think that's where we are today. So what I've said is, as much as I'd like to do personal accounts, I don't know how you justify borrowing more money, increasing the deficit more, to create private accounts for people that are not going to have an impact on the budget for 30 or 40 years. Mm-hmm. So what I've said is we need to get back to the basics. And the basics is let's fix Social Security going forward by making sure revenues match expenditures. And we have to make sure that the revenues matching expenditures are based upon the idea that revenues are not going to go up, that we have to adjust benefits, and the benefits have to be adjusted because just over the course of this program, to tweak the benefits in order to match revenues so we do not run a deficit or a surplus in Social Security. That's my objective, is to make sure that Social Security is made whole and that we can put a formula of different benefit adjustments, everything mm-hmm. from age to eligibility age to early eligibility age to means testing, higher income beneficiaries, to bend points in the calculation formula. There's a whole bunch of things we can do that we can blend together to have minimal impacts that will keep this system solvent. So I hope we get to a point where our deficit is under control, and then we can look to maybe doing something more aggressive on personal accounts.
Okay. Pause this. All right. We're good to go. Okay. Looking into this plan, you mentioned securing the border. What would you do to secure the border?
I offered a bill back in 2006 that laid out exactly what I would do, very detailed. Talked about building at least another, I think, 800 to 900 miles of fencing. Talked about all the different technology we would deploy at the border. Talked about putting increased border security, as well as a necessary temporary National Guard. Frankly, just to deploy all the resources necessary to get a determination on the part of, I think it's the GAO that oversees these things, which is to see that the border is, in fact, secure. Right now, GAO says the border is like 42 or 44% secure, which seems to be a bit of an absurd thing to say. It's 42% done, but it's not 42% secure because mm-hmm. if it's not 100% secure, it's not secure.
Yeah. Okay. You also mentioned you'd like to streamline the legal immigration process. By that you don't mean amnesty.
No, I'm talking about the legal immigration process.
Yeah.
The legal immigration process is for people coming in this country legally, and what we need to do is understand that the current system is a mess. You have a lot of chain immigration.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have immigration focused on bringing people in from to meet certain skill sets that we might need here to have a process that is focused on meeting the needs of the country, as well as bringing in people from places around the world where you have a commonality that we can build upon, common values that we build upon. And so I think that those are all important things to look at, and to be able to have the have a system in place that's focusing on the needs of America and moving forward is better than just grandma coming over because she happens to be in line, or worse yet, a lottery where we just take whoever signs up and happens to hit the jackpot.
Okay. You mentioned you'd like to cut the federal workforce by 10%. Where would you start?
Well, the easiest way to cut the federal workforce from 10% is to get rid of a lot of federal functions. And, one place I certainly started would be in the Education Department. And, we've seen the Education Department grow. We've seen the federal contribution to education go up to 3%. When I first came to the Senate, to now it's about 11%. So that's one area that we could take a big chunk out of. I'd love to be able to shrink the State Department dramatically. To me, the State Department is completely off its bearings and is not serving the interests of the national security interests of our country. And I think a wholesale reform and downsizing of that department and really starting all over as much as we can would be a very positive thing to do there. This is another area that I think is bloated and huge. I mean, there's a lot. The Department of Housing and Urban Development is another area where you would see, housing programs going back to the states. Lots of cuts and block grants of those programs to states, and a lot of reduction in federal employment. That's just in three.
Okay. You mentioned you'd like to see tort reform, at least for federal programs. What kind of tort reform are you looking? What would that entail? And what would be some of the alternatives you mentioned?
Yeah. I'm a big supporter of medical liability reform. I think that's a big cost driver in the healthcare system. And having the fact that Medicare and Medicaid and all of these federal programs and federal price support people say, well, there should be a state function, but the federal government is one of the biggest payers in the healthcare system, and as a result, ends up with a lot higher costs because of the medical liability system. So I do believe it's an area that the federal government has a role and has proper jurisdiction over. And I've supported caps on pain and suffering. I've supported English loser pay system, and would be open to a variety of different reforms that will put some reasonable limitations on the amount of awards that people would get from a malpractice, and combined with that, having a lot tougher state level sanctions, encourage the states to be more rigorous and monitoring, this type of activity, monitoring quality, and monitoring medical errors and physician performance through the licensure process.
Okay. You also set as a goal for your first year in office, should you be elected, to negotiate 5 fair free trade agreements. Any idea with who you'd like to start?
Yeah, to me, one of the big areas is in Central and South America. I really believe that's an area that we have allowed to go to seed. And, we did approve Colombia, and I know we have others, Choi and others that we've done. But to the extent that we can work further in our own hemisphere, I think that's important. So that's one area that I would look to continue to try and improve economic relationships between the countries in this area of the whole world. And the other areas would be, to look at, other areas within Eastern Europe and South Asia, areas that, again, are important strategic areas for us to build economic relationships with.
Okay. Energy policy. You pretty much everything but the kitchen sink, right?
That's me.
Okay. What would
but
be
no
your
subsidies?
No subsidies. All right. What would be the top three things that you would want to do in order to have a more robust energy policy that helps us become energy secure and independent?
I'm sorry. One more time.
Sure. Basically, what would be some of the top three things that you'd want to do to help us gain energy independence?
I'm trying to think. Hold on one second.
No problem.
I'm getting the thing. Checking in here, getting on my airplane.
All right.
Like I said, I think it's real important that we open up drilling in places like Myanmar and offshore, as well as in the Gulf. That is vitally important that we provide more access to, particularly in Alaska, with the Alaska pipeline. Now, the flow there going down and down, we're at risk over time if we don't start adding more oil to that pipeline and risk really losing the pipeline for the use. So that would be a high priority for me. Secondly, we have to build that pipeline coming through the central part of the United States. The Keystone Pipeline would be another very important thing. Third, we have to continue to build electric generation. And my guess is that, I'm a big fan of coal and clean coal technology and using coal, which is a vast resource of ours, and using coal. So we have to work with the coal industry to make sure that we can open up mining. That, you know, the president's put huge restrictions. They've got a war against coal. One of the things I would do is repeal the regs that are about to go into place right now, which would shut down 60 coal-fired power plants. So we would repeal those regs. We would work with the industry to make sure that we can burn coal, continue to burn it cleanly. Don't put ridiculous artificial regulations like these mercury regulations that are being put in place that don't satisfy a cost-benefit analysis, and you know, stop the war on coal, on the permitting of coal mines, which has happened, as well as the burning of coal and doing it cleanly.
Okay. And you'd lift the moratorium on offshore drilling in the Gulf?
Yes, I said offshore, deep water, as well as inland water. Those are, and of course, North Dakota. That's really more of a pipeline issue than it is. Although the administration, I'm sure, is doing their fair to slow down oil exploration up there, too, because it's like it's mucking around in Pennsylvania right now with respect to trying to further regulate the gas drilling and even some of the oil drilling that's going on in Pennsylvania.
Okay. And the last point you make, I think it's the last, you say you'd like to strengthen our national security and national defense so that we are not dependent upon our foes or competitors for critical manufacturing, technology, energy, and other security needs. What ways can our national security and national defense be strengthened, excluding energy, since we just talked about that?
Yeah, I mean, energy is clearly one of them, but look, I mean, some of the basic manufacturing that goes on in this country is really important to have that capacity. Now, we do have critical infrastructure when it comes to our military suppliers, and we always want to talk about industrial base, but it's not industrial policy, it's policy that makes that assures us that, you know, given our increasing reliance, on global trading partners for critical parts, for critical areas, for example, circuit boards, other types of products that are sort of, you know, basic products that are needed for an economy to be able to be self-sufficient. Having the manufacturing policy that I put forward is going to be important, because a lot of those critical manufacturing components, which are migrating offshore, and we now have, you know, fewer and fewer of these components and products being made here, it just leaves us vulnerable. And I'm not suggesting that we need to have an industrial policy and, well, we have this or that. I just, you know, that has to be made here. But we do have to have a manufacturing policy that will, in fact, encourage a lot more products to be made here, many of which will be critical to our base.
Okay. And is there anything else about this plan that you'd like to discuss?
No, I don't think so. I don't have it in front of me, so it's hard for me to say, Shane, but I think you covered it just about everything.
Okay. All right. Take you off speaker here.